This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Edna Lewis changed the perception of Southern food. She did it in 1976 with her second cookbook, The Taste of Country Cooking. She was known as the Julia Child of the South, but many people don't know much else about the chef or the cookbook author. Sarah Franklin is hoping to change that with her new book. It's called Edna Lewis, At the Table with an American Original. It's a collection of essays from the big names of the food world sharing their encounters with Edna Lewis. Sarah edited the book. She's also a writer and a food studies scholar teaching at New York University, and she joins us now. Welcome, Sarah.
I'm so glad to be here.
Well, tell us, who is Edna Lewis?
Edna Lewis is one of the most important chefs and cookbook authors, I would say, in American history, and also one of the first people who sort of entered into the field of culinary history, which has grown in her wake. And she helped bring recognition to the refinement of Southern cooking. She also helped bring dignity to the idea of Southern food. She also helped launch the farm-to-table movement, which is something that a lot of people take for granted now. It's become so ubiquitous. But when she was coming up in the food world beginning in the late 1940s, actually in New York City, and certainly well on until she published The Taste of Country Cooking in 1976, there was no such thing. And certainly you weren't seeing the kinds of fresh ingredients, regional ingredients in restaurants that we're seeing so commonly today. So she's important on a number of levels. And perhaps most importantly, she helped sort of write the history of African-American contributions to American cooking.
Yeah, and tell us about that, because you talked about New York City, and that's where her public career begins, but her life doesn't begin there at all. Tell us about her beginnings in Virginia.
That's right. She was born in 1916 in a tiny little town called Freetown, which her grandparents had helped settle. And it was a small village, really, of formerly enslaved people that had come together to found their own community and to live as independently as possible. They were growing and producing almost all of their own food. They also started their own schoolhouse and hired a school teacher to come from Oberlin College to educate their students. And this was really sort of in the radius of the Jeffersonian tradition in Virginia. So while the community was pretty autonomous, there were people who were leaving to engage in domestic work, including a lot of Edna Lewis's family members. And so we're being influenced by French traditions that Thomas Jefferson himself had been really aligned with.
Yeah, and actually makes its way into a lot of her cooking. We may be getting ahead of ourselves, because she's famous for bringing Southern cooking out of the shadows and giving it a kind of prestige, but also a lot of French influence in her recipes, right?
That's right. So one of the things that makes Edna Lewis's cooking different when it sort of breaks onto the scene with her cookbook in 76 and onto the national scene is that she's taking American ingredients and Southern ingredients in particular and using French techniques to sort of exalt them, which is something that you see a lot today in restaurant culture, that people will take the foods of a particular region of the U.S. or the world and use French, particularly French, and also some Italian techniques to sort of bring them into the world of haute cuisine or fine cooking. And Edna Lewis was one of the early people to do that, and she did it with the products of the American South, which at the time was not thought of as a region that had good food. It had sort of been caught up in this moment of shame and sort of knee-slapping humor, and thought of as kind of all fried chicken and greasy greens of very low caliber. It was not thought of as a region that had really refined cooking technique, but also had an incredible array of fresh ingredients.
And give us a sample, an idea of what we mean by applying a French technique to a traditional or what we consider a Southern food.
So one of the things that you see a lot in the region where Edna Lewis grew up was dairying. So this was neither coastal nor mountainous Virginia, but right kind of smack in the middle of the state there. So you had a lot of milk products. And one of the recipes that turns up in The Taste of Country Cooking is blancmange. And it's called blancmange, which of course is a French name. But essentially it's a cultured milk product. So like yogurt or like certain kinds of butter or cottage cheese even. So things that were sort of associated with American cooking and eating. But she was sort of putting a French twist on them to demonstrate that she had a level of skill and refinement that she was applying to the foods that were available when she was growing up.
We're talking about The Taste of Country Cooking coming out in 1976, but her career gets underway a couple of decades earlier. Talk about moving to New York and what she did there.
Much earlier, yes. Yeah. So Edna Lewis left Virginia as part of the Great Migration, really. She left before she finished high school, which, if you think about the book she wrote, is really just remarkable in terms of how articulate she was. But she left first. She moved to Washington, D.C. to find work as a domestic, and then carried on north to New York City and worked first very, very briefly as a laundress. She was often quoted as saying she had absolutely no talent for ironing and realized quickly she had to move on to something else. But she did find work cooking in other people's homes, and she was really adept at that. She'd grown up cooking for her six siblings, and she was always to provide breakfast and lunch for her siblings, and apparently they were the envy of everyone at school. Her cooking was that good that early on in her life. And she fell in New York with the bohemian crowd. She was a seamstress who made beautiful, beautiful clothes, and she was dressing windows for some of the big department stores at the time. She made dresses for Marilyn Monroe, and she took up with a friend named Johnny Nicholson, who was interested in opening a restaurant. And in 1949, he and Edna Lewis together opened Cafe Nicholson on New York's East Side. And this restaurant really became a hotspot for the kind of literati of the moment. So people like Truman Capote, Tennessee Williams, Eleanor Roosevelt were coming in and out of this restaurant. And Edna Lewis was making this fabulous food, which was very sort of French influenced. But again, it was sort of exalting at the moment, sort of only in whispers, the cuisine of the American South. So people caught on that she could make really fantastically light buttermilk biscuits, and she made the best fried chicken in town. And they would come in and ask for these things, which are off the menu. Things that were on the menu were things like classic roast chicken and her chocolate souffle, which is probably her most famous dish.
Yeah, the souffle got some high marks from some very famous people, right?
Absolutely. And to sort of connect to her North Carolina history, when she began working at the Farrington House, which is not far from you guys in Pittsburgh, which was in the early 80s, one of the first things she put on the menu was her chocolate souffle, and it's still on the menu there today. So this is a really enduring recipe that you see showing up in her cookbooks, but also in menus at places where she worked.
Well, let's keep her in New York for just a moment, because you talk about the Cafe Nicholson. I mean, here are some remarkable things about it. Here is an African-American woman who is a coach. She's owner, right? She owns
That's
it.
That's right. She's,
not
she's
just
a partner. In this restaurant.
Partner
yep.
in the restaurant. She's yep. not just in the kitchen. And not only not just in the kitchen, she pokes her head out and lets it be known that she's the chef, making her perhaps, and you talk about the famous people who caught on and showed up, making her perhaps one of the first celebrity chefs, right?
Absolutely. So if you think about celebrity chef culture today and the people that we might see on TV or in big magazines and newspapers, they're chefs that don't stay in their kitchens when particularly notable people come into the restaurant, right? They'll come out and shake hands and say hello. And Edna Lewis was doing this in this tiny little restaurant before there was really any food culture to speak of in the way that we know it now. There was no sort of food scene. But people associated this food, this really good food that was getting written up in the big newspapers of the time, with Edna Lewis, with her face, with her skill. And so there was a transparency about who this woman was. It was an African-American woman from a rural town in the South who'd made her way to New York and was really known for the skill and refinement of her food. It was remarkable for the time.
I'm talking to Sarah Franklin, who is the editor of the new book, Edna Lewis, At the Table with an American Original. So tell us about some of the, because this is a collection of essays. So tell us who's in this book, who's writing about her, and how they were chosen.
Absolutely. So my hope with this book, I started working on this book in the summer of 2015, and I sort of think about 2015 as this year where race comes back with a vengeance into sort of the heart of American culture. If you think about it, we have Hamilton bursting onto the scene, the musical Hamilton. We have the publication of Between the World and Me, and also the shooting at Mother Emanuel Church in Charleston. And I happened to be down in Charleston the week before the shooting took place. And there was this sense in the wake of those events that things were not being talked about that had been festering under the surface for a long, long time. And in my particular field, that was food. And so it really got me thinking, who and what aren't we talking about enough in this field and in food writing? Who are we not honoring? And so I began to think about Edna Lewis, of course, who I had come to really admire and love through her books. I never had a chance to meet her, unfortunately. And I really wanted to make this book feel like a conversation. I really had no interest in setting out to become the authority on her life by writing a traditional biography. And what I wanted it to feel like was gathering around a table and having something like a salon about this tremendously important woman who not enough people seem to know about. I know I'm two or three, maybe even three generations removed from Edna Lewis, that a lot of people in my generation don't know who she is, even people who are really interested in food and cookbooks. And so I invited some of the most prominent names in food today to comment on how Edna Lewis had influenced their writing, their cooking, their lives in food, because I wanted people to really understand that this was not someone who was sort of a niche hero, but that she was tremendously mainstream in the people that she impacted, and that a lot of the big names in food, like Alice Waters of Berkeley, Kim Severson of the New York Times, Vivian Howard of Kinston, North Carolina, Mashama Bailey of Savannah, and also the food editor of the Washington Post, Joe Yonan, people like that had been tremendously impacted by her writing and her cooking, and how much we needed to start talking about her as food kind of keeps moving to the center of American culture.
Because in her cookbook, particularly in The Taste of Country Cooking, there are these essays, a kind of memoir cookbook that is also shows that Edna Lewis was woke if she was writing today. She was very much aware and was able to weave this in ingenious and creative ways in her cookbook, right?
Yeah, she was woke 40 years before the term was coined, absolutely. But if you think about the mid-70s, you're talking about a moment in American history where radicalization is happening all over the map, right? So the sort of advent of race studies on campuses, academic campuses, the environmental movement is really taking hold. The Back to the Land movement is in full swing. Obviously, the country had been politicized by Vietnam. And so Edna Lewis enters into this moment, I think, that was really open to different kinds of voices. And one of the things that I think was so brilliant about the way that she presented this sort of alternative Southern history of African-American people really doing their own thing was that it was very humble and very quiet. Everyone who knew her talked about how quiet she was. And that's not to say that she was meek or ever ashamed. I think she was quite proud, but that she wasn't brash. She wasn't abrasive in her tone. And the book, The Taste of Country Cooking, is really written with this incredible reverence and joy in the world that she grew up in, the day-to-day work of farming and putting food on the table, and gave great dignity to that life. It was, you know, as Toni Tipton Martin, who's one of the really fabulous contributors to this book, wrote, is we really knew nothing about African-American food during times of plenty. What we had come to associate with African-American food was things that came out of scarcity. So using the bits and bobs of things or the last leavings. And that's certainly really important. But there was another side to that story, which is what happens when people are producing plenty of food and are making really abundant and gorgeous meals with it. And Edna Lewis really gave voice to that.
And well beyond that, I mean, you talk about her writing style and her skill, and Scott Elvez Barton, another contributor to the book, you know, it makes literary connections and artistic connections between in terms of her inspiration, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Scott's essay is wonderful, but Edna Lewis did that for herself. So there was a fabulous essay that was published in Gourmet magazine in 2008 called What is Southern? And the editors at Gourmet bought this essay sight unseen. It was discovered just after Edna Lewis died. And it's maybe the only example of her writing that we have that's unedited. But in that essay, she sort of puts into conversation the environment that she grew up in and the food that she grew up cooking and eating with other pieces of Southern culture. So literature, music, painting, dancing. And she helps understand that these are all sort of a piece, that you can't ever take food as its own thing, that it really belongs in larger conversations about culture.
And when we talked about the farm-to-table movement, I mean, again, honoring these humble foods and you know, showing them in a way that, and presenting them in a way that made us less embarrassed by them, to the extent that people like Bill Neal, who's credited with the kind of neo-South cuisine movement, looked to her, the late Bill Neal, as someone who really influenced him and allowed him the space to move forward with his movement.
Yeah, I think in some ways we can really credit her, along with other contemporaries, that for stopping relying entirely on imports, with this idea that you had to bring something from elsewhere in order to have good quality, but recognizing that we had fantastic products here at home, some things that were indigenous to various places around the country, but also things that we could grow. You know, if you're talking about Central Virginia, you're talking about an area that is temperate, you can grow things all year long, incredible fruit-producing capacity, dairying, the ability to raise all sorts of fowl, not to mention the sort of vegetable gardens that Edna Lewis's family and community community relied upon, and also producing things like their own wheat. You know, they talk about growing, threshing, and grinding their own wheat to make flour. These are things that chefs of today are just drooling all over themselves to get their hands on. They're not thought of humble product anymore. They're thought of as sort of the pinnacle of quality. But at the time, you're absolutely right. We sort of looked last to our own backyards to look for good culinary product.
Now, you said that you knew about her and that you really wanted to bring more attention to her, but I wonder how many surprises there were for you along the way as you put this compilation of essays together.
You know, I wouldn't say that it was surprising so much as deeply comforting to know that other people were as deeply impacted by this woman as I was. You know, I think one of the things that a number of people have said about Anna Lewis is that if you know her and love her, you assume everyone else in the know in the food world does. And that's not necessarily true, particularly as you talk about a younger generation, the kind of new chef generation. And one great example of this is that in a recent season of Top Chef, the contestants who were cooking in Charleston, South Carolina at the time were asked to cook a dish inspired by Anna Lewis. And several of them admitted to having no idea who she was. You know, if you think about it, she's often called the Julia Child of the South. And if anyone who took themselves seriously in the world of food admitted to not knowing who Julia Child was, they'd be laughed out, you know, they'd be laughed out of town. And it was this moment of, oh my goodness, this is a woman who many consider to be just as important in some ways to American cooking, far more important than Julia Child. And there are people who are aspiring to careers in food who have no idea who she is. So I'm hoping that this is the beginning of a correction to that.
And it certainly lends itself, her work, to creativity. There are a lot of recipes or riffs on recipes by the authors of these essays who kind of worked their own magic on her recipes, right?
Yeah, that's right. And I think part of what we wanted to do with this book was to help people understand that this is not a woman whose importance is just frozen in history. She's not at all sort of stuck in amber, but that her influence is being felt now, and that, in fact, people that are interested in eating in restaurants now may be eating food that is inspired by her. There is a very real presence in the here and now of her legacy.
Sarah Franklin is the editor of Edna Lewis, At the Table with an American Original, also a writer and a food studies scholar teaching at New York University. Thank you so much, Sarah.
It's been a pleasure.
Sarah Franklin's going to be talking about her book at the Levine Museum of the New South in Charlotte on Tuesday, April 10th. And you can find out more about that event at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, and Amanda Magnus. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.